Hello, and welcome back to the Ever-Changing World podcast. I'm your host, Ava Zanetti, and today's episode is going to be all about the World Wide Web, and in particular, the three different World Wide Webs that we have come to know and love. There's been a lot of debate over what these three kind of Web 1, Web 2, and Web 3 mean, the differences between Web 1, Web 2, and Web 3, as well as the whole idea of what the future is of the internet and how everything is growing at such a rapid pace. As we know, and as I have talked about a lot before, you know, the internet is going so quick and it's moved so quick from, you know, a certain point in time where, you know, we were still, you know, barely had a grasp on telephone cables and working telephones to the point where we are dealing with artificial intelligence only decades later. And everything really has grown in such a rapid pace where at some points we can't even really understand, you know, what is going on and conceptualize in a way our past, our present, and our future. So a lot of times we use these really broad terms like Web 1, Web 2, and Web 3 to kind of understand where, you know, the internet is coming from in a sense. Because a lot of it, a lot that we have done is very difficult to understand for the broad population. And even for the population, you know, that does understand how the internet has developed, it still is very confusing as it is developing every single day. And, you know, even just the sheer amount of content that is on places like YouTube that are uploaded every single day of the year and every single minute and every single second is so hard to even put in a bubble. And really a big part of this and a big part of the internet nowadays is the war on data, which is definitely an episode I'll be doing separately, but it's a little bit of a brief overview. Because, you know, when you're thinking about how much data we really do have, and when I speak about data, I'm talking about the sheer amount of knowledge we have, not just on people, but on companies, on businesses, and just information that we have on every single thing about our world. We have information to pinpoint exactly where you are at exact point in your lifetime. As long as, you know, you had a device. And, you know, we have this data where we know exactly what you're like. We have these algorithms that are specifically created and curated, you know, to discover what you enjoy and what ads should be targeted towards you. I talked a little bit about this in episode 18, which was a few weeks ago now. And I talked about the TikTok epidemic, as I called it, in social media use, which a lot has to do with the algorithm. But I think other really great examples have to be, you know, that classic example, the one I've heard a lot, is where the girl found out that she was pregnant through ads before she even found out she was pregnant. And she was a teenager, and the guy sued, you know, the dad sued, was like, no, she's not pregnant, why are you showing these? And it actually come to find out a few weeks later she was pregnant, and the algorithm knew before her. And that was not a mistake. You know, those things don't just happen as a silly little mistake. Those things happen for real, for a real reason. And that reason was because of the algorithm. And just the sheer amount of data that our computers and our devices and the world around us collects on a daily basis. And this can be really scary, right? When you really think about how much is on you, how much, you know, control that the overall government, but just every single company has on you. But you also do have to realize you've been living like this for, you know, obviously a very long time, and, you know, it hasn't affected you during that time. So you really have to kind of put all of it into perspective, and I think that's really vital and really important. But, you know, when we're looking at these different types of webs, and why I talk about data is because I think that's a really big part about Web 3. I'm not sure if that's exactly what we'll cover in today's episode, but I definitely know when I'm researching a lot more about the internet, I find that, you know, Web 3 is really big right now at this time. A lot of people have been saying that it's kind of stupid that we're saying things like Web 3 and it's saying this and that. but it's a term we've been using. And I think no matter what you particularly enjoy about Web3 or not, I think it's very vital that we at least talk about it. And, you know, we really can understand the world around us and the internet around us, because the internet really has become our world. So it's a little bit of a quick introduction between that. I wanted to mention that for today's episode, some episodes that I recommend, I did mention one already, which I think is really good, the TikTok epidemic, just because it talks a lot about the internet. But I have tons of videos on NFTs, on cryptocurrency, and all of that, as well as other amazing episodes, which obviously I recommend. And, you know, some other really, really interesting things that are going on around the world and always developing around us. I usually do a little update on the books that I've been reading. Recently, I haven't been reading as many books, but I've been watching a lot of really good series on Netflix, which is a little different, I guess. A really good one is called Our Father. Very insane. I don't even want to get into it on here, but I highly recommend it. It was a really just crazy, disturbing story. So if you, I guess, enjoy watching those, I recommend. I also have been really into watching TED Talks recently, as one of my projects actually for school is making my own TED Talk, and I think some of them have been really, really valuable. The one I really like, I think the really famous one, is a procrastination one, but I really do enjoy a lot of those. I really love Ray Dalio. I don't think he's made a TED Talk, but he's a lot of amazing podcasts out with amazing podcasters, so I highly recommend listening to any of those. He is an investment guy. He created Bridgewater Associates, and I'm sure eventually one day I'll talk about him on a full episode, because he is quite the amazing guy. So yeah, it's a little overview of today's episode, I guess. I guess I gave you a good overview, and I kind of went a little bit off topic. But I want to do a brief overview over Web 1 and 2 and Web 3, and then I just want to talk about Web 3 a bunch. See where that takes us, and then see where this episode guides us today. I think today is going to be a little bit more of a calm episode, and it may end a little bit early, so we will see how that goes. But yeah, why don't we just get right into it, because I feel like I can't talk about anything else but this. So first, what are these webs that I'm talking about? Obviously, not for a spider. That was not a really good joke. So Web 1, basically, the idea behind it, it refers to the first stage of the World Wide Web evolutions. We're talking about the WWW dot, right? Thing we know and love. So, you know, Web 1 really, really wasn't for content creators, right? Nowadays, for me, I'm a kid and I can just make a podcast, right? That's not something I could do in Web 1. Web 1 was really the consumer's market in a way, since it was really only people who were consumers of content, and they were not people that actually, you know, created content. So I think that's interesting to know. As a little bit of a quick side note here that I want to mention, because it's kind of freaking me out, as I've been talking about podcasts, and I want to say I actually use a Yeti microphone when I record these. The only reason why I say this is because I have an ad on this article that I'm reading off of and using. It actually just went away and moved to another one right when I mentioned that, but it was a Yeti ad for the Yeti speakers. Or, like, microphones. So I thought that was very interesting. So some Shopify ads. I think it's very scary. So there you go. Point proven in real time that they listen to us. And then the Yeti ad just popped up again. Oh my gosh. Anyways. Need to mention that. Okay. Back to Web 1. So Web 1, again, is a consumer's market. So kind of these personal... I can't with these ads. It's freaking me out. The quote comes from something called The Next Web. I think they're just listening to me right now. So, the idea behind Web 1, again, there were personal pages, and these were common. But, you know, a lot of these were just these static pages hosted at ISP-run web servers, or just free web hosting services, so kind of like cheap services. In Web 1, advertisements on websites while surfing the internet were banned I think is very important to know, because obviously, as I just mentioned, right now as I'm talking, I am getting ads for things that I'm talking about while I'm talking. Like, I'm getting microphone ads for the microphone that I own and that I'm currently using while I'm talking about podcasts and making a podcast. So these ads, you know, pop up a lot, and we're kind of used to them in a really scary, eerie way. We're used to these ads running our lives and the website knowing exactly what you're about to say next. And giving you ads that relate really well to, you know, everything that you're doing. So that's very interesting to know. So ads were actually, though, during this time, early internet, good old times, were banned. And that, you know, is really important to think about, too, when we're thinking about the ethics behind the internet and what we're doing here. And, you know, ads used to be very contained in a way, and, you know, the most ads you might see is in New York City. But nowadays, I mean, I've seen that people are starting to add ads on, like, the side of boats. Well, I've seen videos, and for some reason that's crazy to me, but if you think about it, if we get chips implanted into our brains and all these crazy concepts, ads are gonna pop up there too. So it's very interesting to know. We are in a, you know, a capitalist market, and, you know, you can't really run away from that. So, in Web 1, there was also this online digital photography website, which was called Ophoto, and this is where users could store, share, view, and print digital pictures. So, Web 1 as a whole was a CDN, or content delivery network, that really just enabled a showcase of information on websites. It could be, it could be a personal website. And also, it costs the user as much per pages viewed. And it was also directories that enable users to retrieve a particular piece of information. So it was just really basic internet in a way. It was our very, very beginnings, and it was very, very, very basic. So the basic essentials of Web 1 were, one, static pages, right? The nice buzzing that you see on your big, huge, thick Mac that's, you know, bigger than, I think, my bookshelf at this point. Content, two, content is stored from the server's file system. So just from the server that you have, no crazy interconnected things going on. Three, pages built using server-side includes or commonly gateway interface, CGI. So there was some CGI, but very, very little, obviously, and, like, very bad. And four, frames and tables are used to position and align the elements on a page. So, again, very basic web. You can also think of this time as, you know, when the computers made noise when you turn them on. I wasn't alive during that time, to be honest, so I don't know the exact sound they made. I'm sure my mom could tell you that one. But, you know, it's that time. You can picture it, you can imagine it, and, you know, that is the time we're talking about. So now we move on to Web 2. This is our second phase out of the three that we, you know, kind of currently have right now. This really referred to the World Wide Web websites, which highlight user-generated content, usability, and interoperability for end users. So this is what is called, in a way, the participative social web. So it's not just a consumer web. We have content creators. How exciting, guys! Make up jobs. But these are going to be vital in the future. They obviously have been. So it does not refer to a modification to any technical specification, but to modify the way the web pages are designed and used. So the transition is beneficial, but does not seem that when the changes occur. So interaction and collaboration with each other are allowed by Web 2 in a social media dialogue as the creator of user-generated content in a virtual community. So it's just an enhanced version of Web 1 where, you know, we have more content creators. So there are also new technologies, which includes Ajax and JavaScript, which are huge programming. And these were, you know, kind of very popular in creating websites, which obviously enhanced the quality, usability, and, you know, just essentially everything about our websites that we have. So moving on from the five features of Web 1, we have the five features of Web 2, which include, one, free sorting of information, permits users to retrieve and classify the information collectively. 2, dynamic content that is responsive to user input. So we can input things into the computer, and it works well enough, right? We can search something. We can do this. We can do that. And free sort of information, you know, you can kind of collect your information, put things into files, manage things better. 3, information flows between the site owner and site users by means of evaluation and online commenting. So we can actually export things. We can move things around. 4, developed APIs, so that's self-usage, such as software application. Again, we can change things about our computer that we could not change before, visibly, on our, you know, screens. And 5, web access leads to concern different from the traditional internet user base to a wider variety of users. So now, we are moving on, not, you know, just say the world by web, but it is actually going around the world. So the usage of Web 2 really, really, really broadened. Really, really big waves, because it used to just be these kind of crappy websites that would hum on the internet that a few companies would use. You know, the internet wasn't that big. No one really cared. No one really used it. It was kind of weird if you used the internet, and you were really lucky if you even had a computer. And if you did have a computer, it did not work really. You know, and it's just kind of bad. So, you know, the really big idea behind Web 2 and why it's so exciting is because there's so many things that can happen. So as I mentioned, one, podcasting. Someone like me, you know, a teenager, can make a podcast for fun and upload it on the internet for people around the world to listen to. That is a crazy concept. It's still a crazy concept to me, but that, especially for the time when it came about, is a crazy concept. 2, blogging. Blogging was huge. MySpace was really, really, really big back in the day, you know, probably like a decade ago now, at least. And, you know, blogging was big. People love to talk about themselves in any setting that they can get, and the internet was a great harbor for that. Humans love to talk about themselves, and if you give them a platform to do so, they're going to do so no matter what. And a great example of that, of course, like anything else, is blogging. 3, tagging. I'm not sure exactly what they mean by this, so I might just skip that. 4, curating with RSS. I'm pretty sure this means updating websites in a particular way. Maybe don't take my word for that, but I believe it's along the lines of that. 5, social bookmarking. 6, social networking. I'm not sure bookmarking, but I know social networking obviously is like social media, which is 7 is as well. Now we've expanded. We can talk to people around the world, which is just another crazy idea. And then 8, web content voting. So you can, I guess, vote on the content that we have, which is very interesting. So Web 2 is basically what we have right now, but it seems like there's a new person in town, and this is Web 3. And this is where people have a little bit of quivering about it. And they're like, I don't know if we should call it Web 3 or it should still be Web 2. But whenever we're between, you know, even things like generations, we don't really know when to end it and when to begin it. And we kind of don't figure that out for at least another, few years. So, you know, we may be calling it Web 3 now. It may change in the future. But for the sake of arguments, you know, argument's sake, we're gonna, you know, make sure that we do that. So, let's see. So Web 3, basically in its basic semantics, refers to the evolution of web utilization and interaction, which includes altering the web into a database. So I talked a lot about databases in, what episode now? I don't remember the number, but it was one of the cryptocurrency episodes. I talked a lot about the blockchain, which is kind of like a database. And really, when we're talking about databases, we're just talking about things that are storing data. And as I mentioned at the top of the episode, the war on data is really, really, really huge. And it's really big. And it's going to just continue to grow since data is, I think, one of our most valuable resources. I think wars are really starting to dwindle to happen in the real world. Obviously, we're going to have one-off examples, but it's really just big to be able to own data that, you know, you can control a broader population. When you know something, you know, everything about a particular person, a particular group of people in the world, you can really change the way they think, the way they interact. It is a big brother moment, like the book 1984. But moving on, I guess, from going into the dramatics here. Web3, again, it enables the upgradation of the back end of the web. So after a long time focus on the front end, so it was, you know, Web2 is a lot about user experience innovation. So how the user feels when they're using stuff and just making the internet way more enjoyable and doing enjoyable things. Web3 has been used to describe a lot more about this back end stuff. So fixing our little wires that we didn't quite cross when we were in Web2. We made it look pretty in the front, but it's a mess in the back, and Web3 is fixing that mess in the back. So Web3 is a term that is used to describe many evolutions of web usage and interaction among several paths. So, you know, this data isn't owned, but instead shared, where services show different views for the same web and same data. So the semantic web, or this idea of our 3.0 web, or Web3, promises to establish the world's information in a more reasonable way than Google could ever attain with their existing engine schema. So this is particularly true from the perspective of machine conception as opposed to human understanding. So the semantic web necessitates the use of a declarative ontological language, very complex word, just to say something like owl, right, to produce domain-specific ontologies that machines can use to reason about information and conclusions. So, okay, the basics between that, without using all those big fancy words that I just blabbered off, is saying that instead of just, you know, using, okay, I look up a dog, you're just going to show me a dog. I look up a dog, you're going to find things based off my algorithm, based who I am as a person, and based off machine learning. Because, you know, every day you're walking around with me. Let's put it in perspective. I am walking down a path at a park, right? You are walking behind me, okay? You are the computer. You are walking behind me. I am the person on the internet. This is a setting we are in. But let's just say I'm walking down the park to make this a simpler idea. So I'm walking down this path. And day in and day out, this lovely person is walking behind me. I didn't really notice that this person is walking behind me. It's just kind of part of walking down the park. Everybody has a little person walking behind them. You can even think about it as a cute little dog, whatever you want to think about it. But you're walking, right? Me. I'm walking down this path. Over to my right, I see a really cool rocket ship. Let's say this park is magical. Whenever you turn, you see something you like. I turn, I see a really cool rocket ship. The person behind me notes that. It learns that I like rocket ships. The next time I turn to my left, I see Elon Musk. It notes that I like Elon Musk. The next time I turn to my right, I see, what are the things I like? I see, I don't know, money. Money is just sitting there. It notes what I like. I keep walking. I see another rocket to my left. Interesting. I feel very happy. I see Elon Musk's new venture with Dogecoin on my right. Very interesting. I see particular news about investing on my left. Interesting. I see news about NASA and the James Webb telescope on my right. I keep walking. I never see anything relating to the arts. I never see anything relating to what is happening in politics, because all I am seeing is the rocket ships, Elon Musk, and money. And the reason why I'm only seeing this is because the machine learned me. That little person walking behind me as I walked down, and I turned a few times, it let me turn a few times and say what I liked, but then it told me what I liked. It told me where I should be turning to. It told me what I should be liking. And it learned and adapted and it became bigger and smarter than me. And it became more powerful than my brain and than my free will. I have no more free will walking down this park. And you know what? Maybe I do feel happy. Because I've learned that, oh my gosh, everything is surrounding me is making me happy. But sometimes I need to wake up a little bit. Look up at the sky and be like, wait. There's a lot of other people with little people walking behind them. I wonder what they're looking at. And so you know what? I am stuck within this bubble. This is the social media bubble that, you know, this machine learned to curate. To act, think, and be exactly like me. So when we're looking at this, you know, when we're looking at this little person walking behind us, it's scary to think that they're looking at our every move and adjusting our moves based off of profits and money. But I think it's also just important to note that, you know what, it's a part of it. And, you know, I think that this is going to be our new future. And I think it's the way that we adapt and overcome and change our policies, the government, the way we even just manage, you know, the internet in and of itself. We should have laws governing the internet because it's such a big part of our lives. And, you know, it's crazy. So I think that's really interesting to think about this web. And again, to talk about the five main features using this great website, thanks to Geeks for Geeks for letting me use your website for so long. But the first point they have here, there's five for Web3, like I mentioned before. What is a semantic web? Again, the evolution requires this. So create and share and connect through search analysts. And it, you know, again, depends on the capability to comprehend the meaning of words rather than keynotes and numbers. So again, it learns you rather than learning the specific words you type. I don't just type rocket. It knows that I love this specific engine, is the idea behind it. To AI, or artificial intelligence, which I will probably do a proper episode on in the future. And this is combining this capability with natural language processing. So, computers in Web3 can distinguish information like humans in order to provide faster and more relevant results. They become more intelligent. The whole scary thing about this is, what if it becomes like iRobot and they become smarter than us? That's where it becomes scary. 3D graphics. This is what we see a lot, where we can see things in 3D on websites and services. I think we've seen this a lot everywhere. We see some museum guides, computer games, e-commerce, geospatial contexts, and more. For connectivity, with Web3, information is more connected, of course, thanks to this, you know, data that we have. So, you know, our user input evolves to this new level, but I think that it is, you know, interesting to note that, you know, it's something that we take granted for, but it is very important we deal with this connectivity. So the word is ubiquity. It says content is accessible by multiple applications. Every device is connected to the web. The services can be used everywhere. So it is the World Wide Web, really, officially. So we have a little bit of a comparison here, which I kind of want to briefly go over. So Web 1 was mostly read-only. So you could, you know, only really read things on the internet. Web 2, though, in comparison, which is really read and write. You could do both. Web 3 is portable and personal, as I name it. Or, you know, it's just basically, you know, you can, everything, you can even write to yourself in the notes app. Like, there's different things, applications that you can do that kind of make it, you know, a little bit, you know, less of that. So Web 1 was more company focused, right? Because we had this consumer market. 2 is community focused. That's because we had a lot more content creators arriving. Web 3 is more individual focused, so growing yourself. Web 1 was more home pages. Web 2 was more blogs. And Web 3, of course, is more live streams and stuff like that. Web 1 was more owning content was important. Web 2, sharing. And now it's less consolidated content. Being able to take it in properly. And some other ones, you know, a lot of it now is user engagement as well. Behavioral advertising. So at first it was only banner advertising. It was also banned too. Web 2 was interactive advertising, but Web 3 is behavioral, where it really does, you know, make that breaking point and really change, to, you know, seeing that. So, kind of looking at Web 3 in a little bit more of a broader sense here, is kind of, again, more, what is this Web 3, the vision for the future, and actually by the guy who coined the phrase. So Gavin Wood was the founder of the blockchain infrastructure company Parity Technologies, who coined this term Web3 in 2014, who laid out his vision of the future of the internet. So for him, Web3 is truly decentralized. So as I mentioned in cryptocurrency episodes, go listen, decentralized means there is no government involvement and, you know, a lot of people, you know, really, you know, take that in there. It is one that's not dominated by a handful of huge players. So it's not really monopolistic in that way, like Amazon and Microsoft. Though, in a way, yes, decentralized, but I feel like it's just more democratic, though I could see it becoming more privatized quickly, right? Things happen like that very quick. People get greedy. But Wood also said that while cryptocurrencies have become popular, Web3 may not rely heavily on cryptocurrencies. So it's not just like a crypto guy's fantasy here. It can be more than that. So this is actually a computer scientist who coined the phrase. And it was shortened to Web3. And it has become an internet buzzword for a lot of people, like Jack Dorsey, who is Twitter founder, and Elon Musk as well, of course, big guy. We always talk about Elon Musk. So Wood, who is one of the co-founders of Ethereum, which is a huge cryptocurrency, and another blockchain infrastructure, you know, kind of talked about this Beyond the Valley podcast and stuff, Web3 vision. So what is wrong with the current web? So a lot of people are saying, you know, Web3 is a decentralized version of the internet, so it's not dominated by these big players like Amazon, Microsoft, and Google. So Web 1 started off with the idea of open and decentralized internet, but Web 2, which is what we know today, that the birth of the trillion-dollar technology companies have strong influence over the internet and a lot of what the web is built on. So what Wood says here, is that the big problem with this is some sort of the same thing as placing all your eggs in one basket. What goes wrong with one of these services, you know, the service is suddenly unavailable for an awful lot of people. So, you know, he also mentions, furthermore, the key word here is trust. We're having to trust people behind the services. We're having to trust the owners of the companies that run the service. And so, yeah, we kind of managed to architect ourselves into this, somewhat like the dystopian version of what the world could be. So what exactly is Web3? It's kind of, again, this alternate version of the web, which is not just by a single service. So as I mentioned, Web3 is that development into behavioral stuff, but it's the way also Web3 and why it's so big on the internet right now is who is controlling the internet. Who is controlling, you know, every part of what we do on this, you know, on a daily basis. And, you know, this is very, very, very interesting to note and interesting to think about. Because I really do just think that when you are thinking that, you know, I think it's really important that when you are looking at this and thinking about it, you have to think, okay, what are my perspective on these big companies? Do I agree with what they're doing and how much ownership they have, or do I want to give the ownership and pass off to someone else? Because truly, we are not, you know, we're not going to have 8 billion people on this earth all share a little piece of the internet. It's a lot more complex than that. So, you know, they want to make it where, you know, no one has, you know, advantage over anyone, at least in theory. You know, the people, you know, when you're on Amazon, right, they have the power, you know, so that's the idea there. So, okay, some key terms with Web3, because I think this is also very important, you know, is It's most often associated with cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, and its technology that underpins it. So, you know, obviously, Bitcoin blockchain is a huge network that we talk about a lot. But Bitcoin is not owned by a single company or person. It's not issued by a central authority, again, like a bank. That's kind of the point of cryptocurrency. It's, you know, anybody can own it. Then we have seen some trifles with that and how that kind of even works in the society that we see today. And to see even if the main concept of cryptocurrency really is valuable in that way. But instead, really, again, it's decentralized, and the network is maintained by a global group of people. So Web3 is basically the idea of a trustless model. Right now, we have to trust companies to deliver service they promise, but Web3, they do not need to. So, you know, we don't need to trust. So the idea here in this article is, what could a Web3 version of Twitter look like? So he kind of gave an example, and he said, so it's much harder for someone like fake my identity because we have cryptographic-based proofs that I have done this, and it can only be possible that I have done this. So really, again, it is all about that trust and building that trust within the community. So he mentioned that we probably have elements of sort of greater, like freedom of speech, in the sense that the system isn't going to airily have gatekeepers that in the same way, you know, there are Twitter employees that act effectively as gatekeepers in the system. So again, how does crypto come into this? Because we talk a lot about crypto with it. So Web3 advocates suggest cryptocurrencies will play a huge role in the future of the internet. So a lot of people who are advocating for this idea of Web3 that we currently have today really, you know, want to apply cryptocurrency to it. So Web3 application runs on, you know, a specific blockchain as well. And it would, you know, run on a specific coin. It could run on Ethereum, let's say, or Bitcoin. So there are thousands, of course, virtual currencies, but Winston said that Web3 and the way he envisioned it may not rely heavily on cryptocurrencies. So he says, I suspect that currency will continue to play a role in services, but I think overall we're going to start seeing services that may deliver without the need to use tokens, which I think is very nice. And I think that's going to be a big jump, he says. And I think it is one of the key factors that's going to open the door to mainstream. He added, suggesting that most people probably won't want to buy lots of different tokens to use a service, which obviously is very true, and it's kind of hard to, you know, use the money that we use today and translate that to, you know, a new currency. So, you know, of course, regulation is hard because, you know, there is already no regulation with Bitcoin because it's kind of hard to do. You know, how will the regulators approach it? So for now, countries around the world are still trying to figure out how the best way to regulate cryptocurrencies and technology, and Web3 is also a part of this. So, you know, we're going to have to kind of fix that and manage it. But the thing is it's like, okay, well, is this the end then? Are we never going to see Mr. Zuckerberg walking around anymore, you know, controlling as much as he does? That's not true. These companies know what's happening. They know that Web3 may be the future and that people are leaning towards this and they may not love their companies and they're not going to let their power and their money go away. So a lot of people like Microsoft and Twitter are investing in Web3 and are making it kind of a point to talk about. And that's important to know because, you know, we may have this idea that, oh, they may not have control, but they might very much will. And, you know, doesn't look like we can get away from everything. And that's really interesting. So a lot of people have really talked about Web3. And of course, Elon Musk has. I'm trying to see the photo. He made a joke about it, like Web3 is like, oh my god, everyone's so weird who like think about Web3 and all of this. But I mean, I don't know. It's kind of interesting. It's interesting to think about. Elon Musk has also been on a huge rampage about, you know, rates. Here, I don't even know anymore. Anyways, I was on Twitter trying to find some more information on Web3, and I ended up going into an Elon spiral. You know, that's just how life works. But yeah, I don't think it'll be the end of tech giants personally. I think they're just gonna keep investing into stuff and making sure that their power's not gone, because why would they want it gone? How dare you? How dare you? So Elon has been talking about it, and, you know, it's kind of a weird concept still, And it's something we're still getting used to. And I think that's really important to note, that it is a new topic and something that people really need to consider and really need to think about when we are talking about it. So yeah, we have lots of new wallets as well. So Ledger is something I talked about with cryptocurrency. I really like the concept. It's just a hardware. I think it just looks really sleek. Ledger is this where you can put your cryptocurrency on a hard drive so it doesn't like go away. And there's actually gonna be Web3 on Ledger. So this is a really quick article. But Ledger is adding a browser extension on Safari, which is called Ledger Connect, which allows users of Ledger hardware wallets to easily connect to Web3 applications without the need for third-party dependencies. So even things like cryptocurrency is a really big part of Web3, even though people do deny it. I think it is one of the biggest parts, since a lot of it is again based on that decentralized network. And when we are looking at a decentralized network, you know, it's going to have things like that, and you know, that's going to be very, very big and very important to note. But kind of looking at Web3 again, we have something called A16Z or Andreessen Horowitz, who is launching a new fund that'll be exclusively to invest in the gaming and metaverse industries. I talked about the metaverse in an episode a while ago as well, guys. I talk a lot about tech and business, I'm realizing. Saying something about me, I guess. But you know, these industries, and he invested 600 million into this fund, which comprises a pool of dedicated cash and new internal structure. So to go into the gaming vertical. So the fund, which aspires to establish the future of gaming industry, it decides to support many businesses and initiatives in a variety of fields, such as gaming studios, which is the intersection of gaming and consumers and infrastructure. So Games Fund 1 is the name of the fund, and the funds will be invested in three primary areas: game studios, consumer applications that promote player communities such as Discord, and gaming infrastructure providers. So A16Z portrays into 300 billion video game market, which I didn't realize the market was that large, but there you go, I guess. Also, this website has horrible ads, and I'm not going to subject you to that, so just look up his name. But Games Fund 1 is the company's first fund dedicated only to the gaming industry. So the injection of a new funding will enable Andreessen Horowitz to expand his presence in the more than 300 billion global video gaming markets. So, quote, "On the long run, we believe that the gaming infrastructure and technology will be essential components to the metaverse," end quote. Quote again, "As games expand into virtual worlds and online services, the demand for tools and services required to create excellent games is soaring," end quote. So he believes that investing, or the group believes that investing into this area is going to be very, very big. So among the fund's backers are a variety of gaming industry professionals, which include different founders, such as the founders of King, Roblox, Discord, Twitch, Blizzard, Riot Games, and Zynga. The establishment of the games vertical comes from another one of its bets, Facebook, or which is now used as Meta, brags loudly about the gaming's metaverse-related prospects. So, gaming in general within the metaverse, massive sums are contributed by gaming industry titans to the metaverse endeavors. The development of popular game Fortnite by Epic Games raised $2 billion last month from Sony to Lego to create the metaverse. So, you know, this has been really, really big, and people are obviously talking a lot about the metaverse, and this is another really big point and topic. And we're seeing this a lot more in news, as well as Web3. So the A16Z team highlighted the billions of dollars of revenue that games like Minecraft produce, which, I mean, it's interesting to say, hey, look at this one game that produces a lot of money. Like, yeah, it's nice to nitpick, but it's also hard to prove that your game's gonna work like that anyways. Citing the open world game as an example of this title that has mainstreamed a long-lasting active community that acts like a social network. So, Horowitz has placed a wager on upcoming technologies such as Web3, quick games, and VR/AR. All this has strengthened his conviction that games demand a specialized focus, just in terms of investment money, but also in operational expenses, which is very unique and innovative, as he says. So, several parties are already investing heavy in the metaverse concept, and all of these different things. So I think the metaverse, Web3, all of that are basically the same thing. It all works hand in hand. And it really, all in all, I think, today's episode, it really depends on where you think the future is going. Where do you think the metaverse is going? Where do you think all of these concepts are going? And that is really the question. What do you think is going to happen with Web3? Do you think Web3 even exists? I know a lot of people don't even think that's a real thing. You know, and the other big question too is, if you do think it exists, you know, what do you think these concepts, you know, make sense? How do you think it, you know, manages itself? And how do you think all of these things work? So, you know, I think that it's really interesting to think about Web3 as a whole. When we're thinking about Web3, I really think it is thinking about the future. You don't need to call it Web3. You know, half the time, I don't want to call it Web3. But I think just overall talking about these really important topics, Web3 and all of these, things that we are mentioning, especially on this podcast, are ever-evolving, ever-changing world. And it's really important to note how the world is changing and how these technologies are changing. Technology is the biggest part of our lives right now. And I think that is the most important thing to note. When you're going through your life, no matter what you want to do in your future, no matter any of it, you do have to think about the internet and you do have to think about these things. And that's just the end of it. You can't not think about it. You have to. And it's going to be, you know, a really big part of our lives, as it already has been a really big part of our lives. Just the sheer amount of internet that we use on a daily basis is absolutely insane. And it's stuff we have to think about. And these things that, like, are Web3, we also have to think about things like, you know, laws that we create. And how these things interact with each other. And the future of the internet. So I think even if you don't want to call it Web3, I think just thinking about the future of the internet, as I'm putting as the title of the show, is really important just to know and understand these concepts. Because, you know, these big things like cryptocurrency, like NFTs, even if you don't believe in them being real or being, you know, important or vital, it's going to be a big part of our lives. It already is a big part of our lives. You can't deny that. So the best that you can do is learn. And as long as you are always keeping an open mind and you are learning about it, you are going to be in a really beneficial spot. Yes, maybe, you know, you don't believe in it. You think it's stupid. Fine. You know what I mean? We all have our opinions. But I think that, you know, overall, just going through it and making sure that we at least understand the concepts and understand the things going around us and going through us is really going to be huge. And, you know, the internet has been with us for a very long time now, maybe not very long, but it's been with us for a long enough time to, you know, want to at least think about it in some intellectual way. And, you know, as long as we are able to understand these things and these concepts, and, you know, we do think about it, we make sure we understand it, I think that's what's vital. And I think that Web3, or whatever you want to call it, is going to be a huge part of our lives, no matter if you like it or not. So, all in all, guys, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I know I sure did. I always enjoy our episodes together. And, you know, of course, these happen on every Tuesday. If you want to look up some of the articles that I use, they will be linked in the bio. As a little bit of a quick shout out to my website pages, please connect on Instagram at ever.changingworld. Again, Instagram at ever.changingworld. I'm very active on there. Go check it out. Twitter is at everchangingwor. Again, at everchangingwor. Not very active on there. I'm more active on Cambridge_bound. Again, Cambridge_bound. though I'm not quite active on there either. But I do like a lot of things on there, if you are curious. The website here is shows.acast.com/ever-changing-world. Again, shows.acast.com/ever-changing-world. Everybody, thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Please tune in next week, next Tuesday, for new amazing podcast episodes. Stay tuned for what I will be talking about next. And guys, the world is always changing.